The following podcast will include spoilers for Blade Runner 2049 and the original Blade Runner from 1982, as well as probably some other works, Harrison Ford.
Seems it never rains in Southern California. Seems I've often heard that kind of talk before. It never rains in California, but girl, don't they warn ya? It pours, man, it pours.
Hello and welcome back to VOK for our Blade Runner 2049, quick little discussion and review about the new movie that just came out last week, the sequel to the original Blade Runner from 1982, which was directed by Ridley Scott. This is directed by
Denis Villeneuve.
He also did last year's excellent Arrival. Yeah, my name is Adam. I'm also known as Drowned Snow on the podcast Device and Fire forums. And with me today, I have Katie.
This is Katie, Lady Griffin on the forums.
And Matt.
This is Matt, Blue Armor on the forums.
So let's just go ahead and give our kind of our lemon cake or whatever rating you want to give it. And we're going to say this is just kind of spoiler-free impressions. And then right after that, we're going to go kind of straight into spoiler craziness. So I would give this, I'd say, like 4 out of 5 replicant eyeballs. I mean, I thought it was, especially visually, it was a worthy like follow-up. I don't know if it's like necessarily going to end up in the same category as the original Blade Runner, because it's like one of my favorite films. But there's some weird stuff going on in this movie that we will discuss. But I was very much surprised. I wasn't really expecting it to be very good.
I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. It didn't feel tedious or monotonous at all, which was my primary concern since it is almost a 3-hour film.
3 hours, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it, and that's in its favor. It's one of the most gorgeous movies I've ever seen, but I also think that some of the choices that were made are really dumb. I am a big fan of the first film, but that's not a perfect movie by any stretch, so I feel very generous in estimating my enjoyment of this movie, which was high. My one complaint is that the IMAX theater I went to had a hole in the roof, and so it rained on me the entire time, which was kind of...
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. We didn't know it. My mom and I went, and there was two... You have to reserve seats, and so our seats had plastic on them, and I'm like, did someone spill a soda here? And we sat down, and then halfway through the movie, a rainstorm came through and just started pissing rain all over our heads. And I guess
they said, ma'am, that's the 4K, the 4D experience. The fourth dimension is you get to experience the rain.
Actually, yeah, it kind of fit for this movie, didn't it?
It did. It was kind of atmospheric. They did not give us our money back. So fuck you, AMC 24.
Good God. That's like unacceptable. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, good movie. Ryan Gosling is a handsome man with a handsome coat.
That coat. All right, Matt.
Wow, I thought my experience was bad the first time I saw it. So I give it a 5. This and Wind River are my two favorite movies that I've seen this year so far. It just has everything that I kind of like. In a movie, I like the long runtime. Noir and fantasy sci-fi are kind of my two favorite genres. It just seemed like a movie tailor made to my particular interest. So I really enjoyed it. And I only seen the original Blade Runner once, and it was kind of half-assed at that. So overall,
oh, no.
I actually. Yeah, but I mean, I still obviously enjoyed the original Blade Runner, but just initial impressions, I like this one better. And that's that. I mean, I ended up seeing it twice, mainly because I had a similar bad experience where about halfway through the movie, I saw it opening night. Some guy got drunk and started talking like almost nonstop. so much so that I got out of my seat.
What's he blade running?
And told him to shut the fuck up. But he still ruined like, a, you know, some of the more emotional, impactful scenes, like, at the end of the movie for me. Yeah, so it was really annoying. But I saw it again yesterday, and it was fun.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow. Yeah, I just saw it in a regular theater at a late showing. It was kind of sparse, and yeah, I don't know. There's one theater near us. It's like all brand new, but it's way cheaper, and you get like free refills of everything. And I had like a free ticket, so I was like, why not? No one interrupted my movie except for at the end. there was like a group of like, I don't know, probably late teens, early 20 somethings that were like, I don't know, man. I don't know what that was. I didn't get, like, one of them was like, oh, that was so great. And the others were like, I didn't, that's not what I expected. It was just like, I don't know how I feel, like, walking out of the movie theater. I was like, So I can definitely see how it's not for everyone, especially the runtime. I enjoy longer movies myself. And like Katie said, I don't think this felt at all like it dragged. Like, it pulled me through the whole way. There was no point where I was like, oh, has it been 2 hours? Like, that just never happened. So I did not see it in IMAX, though, which... that's just because I don't have to drive into the city for that.
So. Yeah, I usually just see regular 2D stuff. I don't care that much.
So let's get into it here. We're going to go full spoilers from this point out. I'm going to kind of, I guess we'll just kind of bounce around a little bit. We don't need to like go through shot by shot or anything on this. But I do believe our first talking point is Kay's jacket.
He has a little flap that he can turn up over his nose. it's kind of adorable. I guess that the air quality is this Los Angeles in this movie or is it San Diego?
We'll get to that later. This is Los Angeles. He goes to San Diego at one point. San Diego is now entirely a trash district. fuck you, LA. This is like some like Angelino's dream. Like, oh yeah, San Diego. We're just gonna throw all of our trash down there, jerks. It's a friendly rivalry between the two cities. You know, one isn't filled with smog and, you know, pollution. The other is, the other's LA.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the orphanage is San Diego, and I was like, "What? Where is he going?" And I'm like, "It's like just as far as the eye can see, a trash dump." I'm like, "Oh, great, that's great."
Yeah, it was a little confusing until you realized, oh, this is not an actual state orphanage. I don't think. I think this is just. Why is this in a landfill?
I definitely didn't understand what was going on when he went down there. I'm like, oh, this was like the orphanage must have been there before this was a landfill. And he's like going to look through records of an abandoned building. And then these people attack him. And then all of a sudden there's a bunch of children still. I'm like, wait, is this actually an orphanage still? Like, who's dropping their kids down there? Like, they're getting, like, Mad Max attacks just to drop off some kids they don't care about. I don't think anyone's doing that anymore. Like,
I don't think that guy would keep records. He's like, he pulled out books. I'm like, this dude is taking cash only for children. He's not putting down names.
He's so high, I expected him just to pull out books and they were all blank, you know? Like, yeah, man, it's right here. Oh, that year's missing. Like, dude, there's nothing on the page. Yeah, it's all in my head. It's all in my head.
I guess going off Kay's jacket, what did y'all think of Ryan Gosling's performance? It's kind of not emoting for almost the entire movie.
Yeah, it's the type of performance he does best, though. Like, it's he does the more, like, quieter, you know, he shows emotion in very specific points.
That's what he's done lately, I guess, yeah.
Right, yeah, it always just seems to be it's mostly the type of movies I see him in, and it seems like that's kind of one of his strong suits, is the more quieter roles.
He's too cool for school and, like, too cool for emotions. It reminded me of Drive.
Yes.
If you saw that.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
I don't know if that was, like, the direction or a choice he made, or... I mean, I felt it worked. It was a little weird at points, especially with all of the... all of the stuff with his cyber girlfriend Joy. That was probably the most emotion he showed, I guess, right? Around her.
He has his freak out in the middle of the movie.
Right, when he meets Decker's daughter. Yeah.
I don't know her name.
Yeah, I forget her name now.
By the way, that scene
curly hair girl in the forest.
Yeah, her working that camera dial thing to make the birthday party is probably one of the coolest scenes that I've seen in recent memory in a movie.
Yeah, it what it did was it took like someone making, you know, a visual editor, whatever. It took something very technical and made it feel like she was playing an instrument almost, right? It like kind of made it seem like it was a bit of art. It was kind of cool.
Her name is Anna.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's a boring name.
Yeah.
it's like we've got joy and we've got love and like Anna. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to talk a little about the way women are treated in this movie.
So one thing I do want to discuss, and kind of this is the whole background framing here, is so in the original movie, replicants aren't allowed on Earth because they're, you know, I don't know, the people are afraid of them. And so they use them just in the colonies. They use them as like, you know, soldiers and workers and whatever. And whenever one shows up on Earth, they hunt them down and kill them. So, but at some point, I guess, after the original film, they had allowed, somehow they allowed replicants on Earth. There were a couple of, like, prequel shorts that were made for this by a few different directors. And so one of them shows, like, basically, you know, the climate leading up to this blackout that they talk about, where, like, all of the information is lost, essentially, or most of it, anyway. And it's kind of vague because it seems that it's largely centered around like Tyrell Corporation and their records, but it also seems like a lot of other stuff is lost. Like in the thing, it does, like, I don't know, the city goes dark and I'm sure they have a backup server farm somewhere. I mean, come on. But apparently like it erases everything. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah,
that's not important.
It is important. I want to talk about the blackout.
Well, no, I mean like the logistics of it is not important. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
The actual blackout's very important.
It's kind of that cyberpunk thing of the fact that this is kind of like a future of the past, in that it doesn't make a lot of sense with where our technology is today, that this is where the future would have gone. It's that they had an energy revolution instead of a communication revolution. So it seems like they can, I mean, they can do interspace travel, but they don't seem to have the internet, if that makes sense. And so it's like, oh,
it seems like they sort of do, but I don't know.
I feel like they don't have like a global search
engine. They never developed the cloud or whatever.
Yeah. It's so when they say all of our information was wiped out, I'm like, well, you didn't have a backup server, but I don't know, maybe that they just didn't, like, all of the resources weren't poured into making reliable memory data.
But see, I could understand something like a virus. Like this, like it was like an explosion that took out, you know, stuff and wiped stuff out. But I can understand if there was some sort of targeted virus that, like, you know, ate up, you know, computer memory or something. And it just worked its way across the world and wiped everything out. And, you know, bank records and all that. Like, fine. But they don't really go into too much detail on it, I guess. So, but at some point, anyway, these replicants were kind of all over Earth, like the newer versions of them that were supposedly more, you know, they were more controllable, I guess, after Tyrell's death and everything. But the blackout is what caused them to be banned again. And so at the time, they had in the original movie, they had like a lifespan of, you know, a few years or whatever. And so these had, like, no set lifespan. So that's why there's so many of them, like, running around still. And then it was years later after Wallace takes over, I guess he, like, you know, invented super wheat or something and fed everybody. And after he, you know, ate up the Tyrell Corporation, that he gets them to allow him to make more replicants, because they weren't even allowing any replicants to be made, like, for off-world at that point. And he does this by like having a by bringing a replicant to some meeting and having it commit suicide to be like, look how controllable they are. And then they let him make replicants and we get where we're at now. There's a whole scene with Jared Leto being, you know, crazy balls and like having this dude kill himself in front of these other guys. And they're like, oh, I guess you can build more like him. You know, it doesn't make sense, but whatever. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting how quickly that comes around all the way to, you know, flash forward to where we are now. And we have Kay is the, you know, replicant Blade Runner, who's, and we still see there's a lot of prejudice, you know, skin jobs and like no one likes him. but they, you know, they seem to be widely used now in society, and there doesn't seem to be, you know, murders or as, like, I don't know how he got over that fear of the public had. Maybe he just had a bunch of them kill themselves on national TV. I don't know what happened. Mm. But, I mean, this is a world where Pan Am and Atari still exist, and the Soviet Union is still around. So, I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, it is weird because there's no open, really, replicants in the first movie. Everyone has to be in hiding, and Deckard, who is absolutely a replicant, doesn't even know that he's a replicant.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Versus Ryan Gosling, who's like, yeah, this is who I am. I've been regulated and standardized, and they keep me in check with this pretty, probably my favorite part of the world building in this movie is like his PTSD test.
Yes,
make sure that, baseline test.
Yeah, to make sure that his emotions are in check and he's
yelling, not yelling back, yelling.
Cells interlocking with cells.
He's like, can you handle this loud noise? I like the original, like the Void Cop machine was kind of, it was funny, but like, yeah, they're like, back then it was a lot harder to tell who replicants were, and I'm like, I don't know, you seem to just be yelling at this guy a lot.
Yeah, it tests empathy on very specific points. Did y'all ever read the book?
No. The Philip K. Dick. Yeah.
Do androids dream of electric sheep? The Void Comm test is in that too, and it's more detailed than the one in the original Blade Runner movie. And it's supposed to, like, the way they test the replicants' empathy is so obvious and disturbing. Where Deckard, he hands Rachel this piece of leather, and he's like, "This is baby skin. Does that make you feel anything?" And she's like, "Oh no, not at all." And he's like, "Yep, she's a robot."
totes robot. All right. Time for lunch. Oh man. Yeah. So we get the opening is kind of beautiful. You know, we get all these sprawling shots throughout the movie. Like I said, the visuals are probably the strongest part of the movie, and I think the movie's overall very strong. In other aspects anyway, but it seems like he's out kind of maybe like eastern part of California or something, where he finds like the, what are those like little grubs he's farming, the protein farming, I don't know, nasty shit that guy's farming, but yeah, it's like as worms. Far as I can see, solar panels, right? You know, it's like sort of like hint, hey, maybe we should do this. But yeah, that whole scene opens up, and I went in cold, so I didn't really know much about what was going to go on in the movie. Like, for instance, I expected to see Harrison Ford a lot sooner. I mean, it's fine. And I did not know, so when he's like, how do you feel, you know, hunting your own? It took me a second, like, him getting thrown through the wall, and I'm like, oh, he's a replicant, too. Like, oh, that makes a little sense.
That was a cool thing, because it's just like, how on earth is he winning this fight?
Ryan Gosling can just straight up, I mean, there's a part later in the movie where Harrison Ford locks him out of a room and he just crashes through the wall, like a straight up brick and tile wall. It's like, oh, he's pretty much indestructible, but he still has blood. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well. And he can't drown. Maybe. So, so anyway, so Sapper, played by Dave Bautista, in a very short scene where we just kind of get to have a little brawl between these guys here, and he talks about the miracle, and you find a really disturbing corpse in like a footlocker buried under a tree, which trees are extinct, right? That's a thing. This tree's dead, but I guess that tree is worth like $1 billion, all that wood. So we get to see all the little toys he's got with his little robot flying disc thingy and scanning shit and putting eyeballs on the plate. His job seems like it kind of sucks. So what we don't get is if there are any human Blade Runners. Like, how many Blade Runners are there? Is it just replicants that do it now?
You would think it would be all replicants. You wouldn't want... It seems really dumb in retrospect that Deckard, who, okay, might be a shittier replicant, but, like, the idea that we're going to send squishy humans up against super robots that can just rip their head off.
Yeah, no, they got guns, though.
Still, you want robot on still. Robot action.
Yeah, you do that hot robot on robot action, gears grinding. Definitely, it doesn't seem like the best idea. But the whole point is they couldn't trust them. Now they can, so they've got this guy. And I guess also the fact that they feel that, you know, these replicants, the Nexus 8s or whatever they are, they don't lie, they don't run away. I wonder how much work he really has. Like, it's mostly he's looking for these old models that pop up here and there. It's like he's a cold case guy. Like, on any given day, does he just, like, not have anything to do, you know? It's an interesting question.
They pay him a salary, which is strange to me.
Right.
Yeah, I guess they don't keep tabs on what he does in his free time. It's just assumed, like, whatever, I don't know, that part kind of mystifies me, the fact that he has his own apartment, that they don't keep him, like, in a storage locker on yeah, site.
They just don't, like, shove it, like, RoboCop. You have no freedom. You are property. I guess, and that's part of the whole, one of the questions that Blade Runner in general asks, like, what's human and how do you treat these people? And I think it says, like, when they have emotions, they're easier to control and they're easy, like, so maybe it's easier to keep him at baseline when he kind of has the ability to go do his own thing and come and go. And I don't know. She was clearly able to track him, like, later in the movie when Love comes asking the lieutenant, which I don't really understand her deal, where Kay is at, and she's like, "Oh, I don't know, he's off duty."
And okay, well, they tracked his car.
Yeah, they just tracked his car, right? So, yes. Which I would have thought he would have disabled that, but whatever, he's not that smart.
Whose deal do you not understand, Love or the lieutenant?
Robin Wright, the lieutenant. Like, she seems to be very protective of him. At one point, like, I think she's coming on to him, but
yeah.
Yeah, she definitely is.
It's this weird thing. Like, she knows. She's like, "You're off baseline. Like, isn't that, like, okay, we're taking you offline and you're, like, going in the box right now until you can fix this?" But instead, she's like, you know, "Take a day off and you better come back and be in the right headspace." She sort of treats him a little more human that way. But also, like, at that point, don't you think he's, like, a dangerous piece of equipment that might,
she's,
you know,
fond
kill
of him.
Someone? Or, yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, what her role is here is a little confusing sometimes.
She has a really good line, though, when she's drinking with him, and she says, "You know, I forget sometimes what you are," and that's her contradiction, is that she does forget that he's not a person, and then it's like she has to check and remind herself, and it's like she can get away with treating him as subhuman, but it's like, but she still wants to treat him kind of like a pet. Or as a toy that she can play with.
Not as necessarily an equal, but as kind of almost like a child.
Right.
Which, I mean, like, it's like, are they, you know, how far off from human are replicants?
And if people know, it seems like the general public would not have the details of how close replicants are to human beings. Like, that would be bad optics for the company. It would just be like, yeah, these are androids. They don't have thoughts or consciousness or feelings. They're just ones and zeros.
But I mean, it's like everything about their body is biological, right? Like, everything about them is like us. There's no, like, wires or metal. Like, I don't know how they make them stronger and whatnot, but it's not like in a lot of other films, if there's a robot or something and you know start tearing it apart and you see it's got metal skeleton and all this. Like, they're, you know, they're very fragile too. I mean, you shoot them, you cut their throat, like, they die. So, sure.
Yeah, but maybe I don't know how much, like, the general public has exposure to replicants, if they're used mostly in police work or with, I would assume, industrial work.
Well, you got all those, like, replicant, like, you got the replicant,
workers,
and you got sex workers. Like, they seem to be more used now, because, like I said, in the original movie, they weren't even allowed on Earth. And Wallace's big thing that he wants to do, which I don't really understand, is he really wants to figure out how to get them to reproduce, right? Because he says he wants them to conquer the stars, and we don't have enough, like, there's not enough humanity out there, so we need to, like, the replicants are, like, I guess he views them as the next step of humanity, maybe? And, like, he can't make them fast enough for us to get off world, because Earth is trash and basically the humanity needs to get off world in order to survive.
Yeah, but he just...
It's weird because he has this control over them. What makes him think he's going to have so much control over a replicant that's born? Or does he not care about that?
This is the part of the movie that I have the most issue with, and it's pretty much the main conceit of the whole film. As soon as they were like, "A replicant who gave birth," I was like, "Oh, god damn it, no. You could have done so much better." But, yeah, the thing that drives me nuts about this premise is, one, why wouldn't you pour all your resources into improving your means of production instead of pouring your resources into trying to get robots to fuck? This,
yeah, because then you have to make more fucking robots, literally, and like you have to wait for them to grow the other robots. And I mean, I guess the idea is at that point, you know, if it takes 100 years, you're hands off. You no longer have to produce them, but. Like, I don't know what his manufacturing issues are. Like, how many he makes, how many he wants to make, you know?
Yeah, it just, the thing is like, these people are constructed, and the idea that they have functioning ovaries and testicles just, like, that blows my mind in and of itself. But, like, pregnancy in your constructed humans, that's bad optics for the company. Nobody's going to want that.
Yeah, and, yeah. Like, except for him.
Yeah, and then we find out later that, like, there's this implication that Deckard was designed to meet and fall in love with Rachel, which, okay, if it was like a weird experiment on the part of the Tyrell Corporation, I could kind of understand that, but like there's so many variables into that, and like, we need to design these robots to be attracted to each other and then make babies. It's like, no, that's too complicated. Just like,
well, I mean, there's two sides of that. Like, if he's a replicant, then he was designed to show up and fuck. If he wasn't, then he was just picked out of some pool by Tyrell of, like, someone who's genetically compatible that he wanted to show up and, like, arrange their meeting. I mean, I think it's heavily implied that he is probably a replicant, but the fact that it's open to interpretation, I think, is what makes it great, is that it's like, yeah, he could be, he couldn't be, and then at the end of the day, like, how much does it matter whether or not he's a replicant? It's just, and the whole thing is weird. I mean, it's okay to me that, you know, the whole plot hinges around the fact that, you know, she was able to give birth. That's great. But that would be more significant to, like, Love or to the other replicants. Like, they're like, hey, like, this is like our miracle child. Like, it just doesn't seem like it would be a good idea for Wallace.
Yeah. And, if you want to control your slave labor, then giving them the ability to breed on their own is a bad idea.
I mean, does he maybe just think about he's going to send all of the breeders off world and like just be like, good, I don't have to make anyone off world anymore, or like, I don't really understand it. But then also, he's got a shortage, he can't build them fast enough, and he kills them all the time. Like, oh, these are so precious, I can't build them fast enough, I don't like this one, shoot it. Like, what?
Yeah, the Jared Leto character is probably my least favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah, I kept seeing, like, Extreme Joker, you know, Suicide Squad, and I'm like,
Yeah, part of it is just his cachet as a actor in Hollywood is not at a high right now, so when he comes on screen, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy, this weirdo who mailed people, like, condoms when he was in that other movie.
And, like, or something, or... It's like, I'm the Joker. I'm going to do really horrible things to my castmates because I'm method. All right, dude. It's cool. It's like, tone it down, okay? They gave him crazy eyes in this movie, too. They didn't explain what that was about.
Yeah, but he sees through his little floating implant rock thing.
Right, yeah. He just
has, like, that one likes to jump. Like, now, was that one of the little things or was that an actual fish?
Actually, I was confused on that. It looked like a fish, but yeah.
That's what I'm like. Is this a fish? I think it's a fish, but then all I see are these little cameras flying around. So right, I don't know.
Probably an engineered fish, but sure.
His office, by the way, is pretty dope. Pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the aesthetic in this movie is amazing. But what does it say that Tyrell's pet was an owl, even though it was a fake owl? And you're like, ooh, you know, wisdom in the owl. And Wallace is like, I got a bunch of fish.
I do like that the Wallace Corporation has kept the Tyrell's fixation on tombs and pyramids and, like, my office is in the center of a giant mausoleum.
Well, I mean, that would have cost a lot to rebuild, so, you know, you just got to kind of redecorate a little. And he's got the tubes full of, like, the prototype replicants and stuff. They're like, oh, that's a little morbid, but cool, I guess. There's also, for an office building, yeah, it's very minimalist, it seems, right? Like, everything is hidden behind a wall. You have to, like, pull a wall out to get to any of the cool technical, you know, stuff like that. Like, there's no computers hanging around like you would expect.
I got nothing on that.
Yeah, the design work of the Wallace Corporation, like the whole movie, but specifically the office where Kay works is very like old 1980s Apple kind of like where everything's kind of blocky and chunky, and then the office at the Tyrell Corporation is very like pseudo organic, where it's like water and smooth stone, but in this facade of being like there's no people around, it's just this desolate barren sort of place where it's like you can't even tell where the what the interface would be between people and the machines.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it too, is as much as it's updated, like some of the UI is definitely like, at one point isn't it just like blue or green, you know, block font from the 80s still, you know.
Yeah. Hard to read.
That's the issue with, you know, it's a, you guys stick with the world building of the first movie that was made in the 80s, so there's some limits with what
they
can do.
That's why we have Atari and all that stuff, which I think is more cool than anything else.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, Pan
Am. I mean, that was some of the best parts, were just, it was, you know, it was mostly world building through visuals, which is, you know, something you rarely find. And there's not a lot of heavy-handed dialogue in this, which is good. Yeah. I mean, it's what you want from a fantasy sci-fi story.
So let's go on to talk about kind of one of the, I don't know, it was one of the more interesting and weird aspects of the movie was his digital girlfriend, Joy. How'd you guys feel about her?
You know, I have a question. Did y'all think that Joy is real? Like, in that, does she have actual artificial intelligence and consciousness?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because it just seemed... It seemed like the program was designed, you know, it had certain baseline personality, but it seemed very much designed as something that adapted to the customer that bought it. And so that they were just built to, you know, right, have feelings for said customer. And so, you know, all the things she says throughout the movie are things that specific AI believes. Yeah.
Is it like she's a really advanced Siri, or is she something more, you know?
Yeah, you can't... She's like a shadow of the replicant human mm-hmm. conflict, because she's lower mm-hmm. than the replicants. Like, I don't even know the character's name, the sex worker who comes and sleeps with Ryan Gosling. At one point, she's like, I've been inside you, there's not much there. Like, she's sub-replicant, so she's not even worthy of their respect or disdain.
Her name is Mariette.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that...
Mackenzie Davis, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that Joy doesn't have intelligence or consciousness that's worth respecting. It's just that she's seen, or... Except for Ryan Gosling, who, you know, has all sorts of illusions about her, but she's seen as being an advanced toy. And it's like, we don't have enough information about her to know if that's actually accurate or if she actually has personhood.
Because after she's killed and he comes across that advertisement, which is just an advertisement, you know, it makes her, looking back, it makes her seem very fake, but I mean, it's not the same, you know.
Yeah, and it's no different than the fact that he has just found out that he himself is artificial, and that there's the things that he thought made him a real boy were in fact lies. You know, he goes through this revelation where he thinks he's special. He thinks that he has a past and he was born, and then it turns out that's not real, that he was produced like every other replicant. And so there's a level of artificiality to him that I think that he's seeing reflected up in this advertisement, like, oh, she was artificial, but I am artificial as well. And aren't we sad, two artificial beings who pretended we were in love for a while? And like, there's a sadness in that, and
we could have gone all the way.
Yeah, I mean, Joy, I think, is like a really interesting character, just because I did feel compassion for her and wanted to believe that there is like an actual mm-hmm. personhood to her. My big problem with the character is that the culmination of her character is that she just gets killed, and that's like there's no mm-hmm. real complete arc for her, and so she gets smashed in her final, I love you, and then...
And there was no, like, she was sacrificing, or, I mean, like, she's, like, take me with you, kind of, like, putting herself at risk when she didn't, you know, to protect him, which didn't really even do anything, and then she never really did anything to kind of help, or, it felt like he just took her, it was more selfish, like, him taking her, and then she just dies.
She gets fridged, which sucks because, like, their dynamic was interesting and she was interesting as a concept and a character, and it just, like, a lot of things in, like, a lot of the ideas in this movie, I think, sort of don't
run out of time.
They run out of steam and time, where it's, like, they have to simplify things towards the end, and it's, like, what they were, like, ideas that could have been expanded upon or tantalized just kind of fade out, and so she gets killed, and it doesn't matter, like, love smashes her with, like, I hope you enjoyed our product, boom! Mm-hmm. And it's kind
You're
of
like,
silly,
oh,
and...
damn, okay, then.
Yeah, it's, like, that was a little cheap. I get, like, to me, like, the question of can replicants reproduce is such a boring question that this movie asks, but, like, the idea that there is this intelligence below a replicant whose consciousness is questionable, and that, like, the fact that she's designed for, you know, male pleasure and consumption, and that changes how people see her, like, that's more interesting to me, and it disappears at the end. So,
and she somehow hires her own prostitute.
Yeah,
like, how did that happen?
That scene visually was pretty awesome when they're syncing up, and, like,
oh, yeah.
Poor, like, I feel bad for everyone in that scene, but, like, Ryan Gosling, like, that can't be, you would be more fascinated than, I think, turned on. It'd be like, what the fuck? Like, you have to make out with someone who's phasing in and out of another person? I don't know.
They got two lips.
I would not be able to get aroused to that. I would just be like, I need to sit down. This is a little too weird.
Like, I just want to watch. Is that okay? Because this is weird.
Yeah, no, it was one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen in the movie.
Yeah, like, from a technical standpoint, like, that was just, like, I would love to see, like, a, you know, when the Blu-ray comes out or whatever, like, the breakdown of how they made that work, because I'm sure that took a lot of time and money. But
yeah,
let's kind of move on to the whole, like, kind of like the major journey, I guess, for Kay on his way to becoming Joe, which I don't think actually sticks. And no. poor Joy. And thinking that he might be this replicant child. Did you guys buy this? I mean, I thought initially, I'm like, oh, well, maybe that must just be that he has memories from this person. Like, maybe a bunch of people have these memories. I never really thought he was actually going to be this replicant child, because, I mean, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, he would have to have a full childhood. And, like, how do you hide that? And then you'd, like, reprogram his brain later in life. And, like, I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me, right?
So, yeah, it seemed like the obvious answer, and therefore it probably wasn't the correct
one. But he bought it, so.
Yeah, I bought it just because the movie had already disappointed me. So I'm like, yeah, I could see, like, he's Deckard's son, the next generation. I expected it to go there, but I did like that it didn't. And even though I really dislike, for a lot of reasons, I really dislike the scene where Freysa is revealing to him that he is not the born child, and there's a revolution coming. I did think that Gosling really...
Next time.
Oh, God, I hate it. But I did think that Gosling pulls off the crushing disappointment in that scene of, oh, I thought I was a real boy, but I'm not a real boy. It's just it was sad.
Yeah, and her response was like, oh, you thought it was you.
Oh, it was so pitying.
Yeah. And she's like, we all thought it was us. So, like, did any of you find the damn carved horse? Because I found the carved horse. Like, how did you think it was real? Like,
no, but that is a good.
Like, then they just someone keeps going and replacing the carved horse every time someone finds it.
It is powerful that is their unifying thing. Is like we all craved to be. For this thing that really doesn't matter, this idea that, like, being born is the arbitrary deciding factor of what gives you personhood, it's like they all desperately wanted that thing, and that's what allowed them to say, oh, maybe we deserve better. Like, that's a cool idea. I'm less enthused about suddenly, oh, by the way, there's a revolution going on, but we're not going to show you anything, and bye. Like,
yeah, because, I mean, for the humans, once you find, I mean, that's just it. It's like he wants to find Deckard's daughter. Like, what's he gonna do with her? I mean, can he reveal to the world that, like, here's a replicant that was born? Are they gonna view it differently? Like, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, the conclude, like, I just don't understand how Harrison Ford and his daughter are safe at the end if Wallace is still out there, and probably has a whole closet full of loves that he can send after them. And now that Ryan Gosling is dead, they have no protector. It just...
Ryan Gosling would presumably just go
with the revolution people.
We don't know that for sure. Okay. But Harrison Ford just died. He totally just drowned. They're never going to find the body because it was so deep, the water they were in. It's impossible.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's bullshit.
He just drowned. They were just right off that giant seawall, and there's no way they have the technology to look for a body. So
they found bones under a tree.
I know. The logic doesn't make any sense. Like, you did die. I'm like, well, did you get like a fake Harrison Ford body?
Right, I got a fake body.
Like, they're going to realize there's no one in the damn ship.
Yeah, there's a lot of contrivance in hand waving going on. Like the fact that they can't torture Deckard on site at the pyramid. They have to send him off world for special torture machines. Really? Like, Wallace doesn't have, I don't know, like stick some bamboo shoots under his fingernails.
It's like international waters, man. He's like, you can't have that shit on Earth. I gotta have it, you know, out where there's no law.
How advanced does the torture mechanism have to be? I'm just saying, like, hold his face close to the fire. He might talk.
It's probably some sort of giant like technological apparatus that like they can't hide. It's a machine, you know, that's illegal in some way.
Sure.
Right. It's silly.
I'm reaching.
I know.
Yeah. So anyway, so the quest for the wood horse and getting shot down by Mad Max people does lead us eventually to Deckard's Vegas, where there was a dirty bomb, I guess. There was a lot of shit that went down in this world, I guess, while we were gone. And apparently someone blew up Vegas for some reason, but only kind of irradiated it and made everyone leave. But the radiation is better now, and Deckard is living it up because there's all the booze he wants, and he just, like, grows shit food and drinks booze with his dog.
And his beehives.
Oh, right. He has honey, yeah. Hmm.
I'm more interested where these giant statues.
Yeah, that was the one thing that confused me throughout the thing. I was like, where did these statues come from?
They're like, we don't want to use any copyrighted images like from Vegas currently, so.
Yeah, the sea of women's high heels that Ryan Gosling has to wander through. It's like, all right.
I was like, just show me like the Eiffel Tower or the, or like of the fallen down Statue of Liberty, you know? All of those little mini-scale versions they have in Vegas. And I'll go, okay, it's Vegas. We're in Vegas.
The coolest part of the Vegas sequence, other than it just looks amazing, is their chase through the hologram auditorium. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, where the hologram is out of sync with its audio, and it's...
Oh, yeah.
That was really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... It was like history. It was like... looked like it was some sort of, like, futuristic history of Vegas show, you know? Marilyn Monroe and Elvis and all these different people. But it definitely, I couldn't tell if it was jumping around as much because it was broken or like it was just some sort of weird mashup that, you know.
I assumed it was damaged.
Yeah, I just assumed it was broken.
No, I know the jittering and stuff, but I meant like the fact that it was going in between different people and all that. Like I wasn't sure if like it was just supposed to be Elvis or if it was just supposed to be these other people, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was probably like a long form show featuring different artists.
But I love how at the end they're just like, oh, you want to get a drink? I guess we could have talked this out to begin with.
Yeah, Harrison Ford looking like he does every day in his dirty don't give a shit pajamas. The biggest question is what the hell happens to the dog at the end? That's never resolved, and I find that distressing. That dog gets left behind. Everybody leaves Vegas.
Did it? It was there when they came and got Kay. I guess I just sort of assumed that they brought it, but why would they? Hopefully they poured a bunch of whiskey on the ground for it.
Yeah.
Don't give booze to dogs.
VOK PSA, we do not condone giving alcohol to your pets. It's probably not good for them.
Could be funny, but it's probably bad for them. So... Yeah, it is weird that, like, all the musical callbacks, like, I think Kay's looking at a jukebox at one point, and it has a
holograph?
Yeah, and it's all, like, 50s and 60s, which, if this is, like, the future of retro 80s, I guess that makes sense, that's like where their nostalgia sweet spot would have been before the bomb spell.
Were you kind of expecting like Bruno Mars to like pop up?
That would have been great.
Like, oh,
Jason Mraz.
He probably cost more to put on there than like getting old like Sinatra stuff, right?
If it was Smash Mouth walking on the sun, that probably would have been.
Hey now, you're an all-star.
Oh, God.
Oh, the classics.
I can't wait to be in my nursing home and they're going to turn on the radio and say, okay, this is the oldie station. It's going to all be Creed and Smash Mouth and Third Eye Blind.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez, Grandma. Can't believe you ever listened to this.
The 90s. It was all that in a bag of chicks.
Your hair's gonna be white, but you'll dye it like green, you know.
Do you ever think about that? Like when we're old people, we'll be listening to like Nelly and like all these rap songs in our nursing homes and stuff.
Yeah. I try
and,
not
all the tattoos
to
that sag. And...
I look forward to it.
I very much look forward to it. I'd be like, yeah, man, put on that Eminem album. Like, what? I look forward to the reactions of, like, the young nurses and stuff. And, like, just to see, like, what they're listening to and how, like, I don't know, if they're going to be totally turned off or... Because, I don't know, there's some older music that's still great that we still listen to, classic rock and things. But when, like, you're in a nursing home or, like, my grandpa would put on, like, a station on, like, straight up from, like, the 50s, man. And I'm like... There's very few songs from back then that I can dig into. So it would be rough.
Hopefully all the nurses will have been replaced with sex robots by then. So
all those Chinese sperm extractors.
Yeah, that's the thing. Future I want.
It's a thing. Yeah, well, they say, like, I always see these articles, you know, like, oh, in 20 years, you won't even need the surgeon anymore. It'll just be a robot. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
That's how the revolution happens.
Maybe. I mean, like, it's like drivable cars, right? Driverless cars. Like, yeah, sure, maybe 5 or 10 years from now, they're perfect, and they're way safer than humans and all that. But do you really think people are just going to all of a sudden say, oh, let's not drive anymore? Like, people won't trust them until they die, you know? Like,
right.
It's the generation born with them that will trust them.
As of late, I feel all these projections into our future and all the cool things we're going to have, I feel much less optimistic that we'll even get that far. So
yeah.
I just want us to survive the nuclear fallout of the next few years. And then I'll maybe feel like dreaming about flying cars again.
Yeah, I'm like, they've been dreaming about flying cars for quite a long time now, you know? The future of 1963. Everyone has a flying car and a refrigerator.
Well, lives
one of those
on
things
the moon.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Little Jimmy's going to the moon for the day. Yeah. We're too busy, like, not fucking things up down here.
I know, not caring about the climate. Anyway, I have a question. What did y'all think of Love's character? Like, did you like she's interesting just because she actually has a range of emotions that I think are compelling, and that, like, when she's having
a psychotic tendency.
Yeah, she has that, but she also is moved, or just like she gets angry and she gets frustrated, like when she's confronting the lieutenant and crushes her hand around her shot glass and like she starts to cry, and it's like she is that wigged out and frustrated and angry and desperate that she's just like, I am very tense right now and I need you to work with me.
She pivots very quickly, doesn't she, though? Like, from like the kind of executive assistant replicant who seems to kind of have it all together to just like breaking people's spines and like...
That was gross.
Yeah. Probably unnecessary, too. I mean, geez.
Yeah, how bad is the security at the police station that she can just sneak in and start stealing bones? Do they not have cameras or?
Right. Yeah, I did consider that, but then I just figured that Wallace just has, you know, backdoors to everything. Like, I just feel
he has access.
Yeah.
Right. He knows it's there, so. Why doesn't he have, like, back channel, like, someone just,
yeah,
like,
you're right.
Some
he could have
dude in a suit just
the,
get it
yeah.
for him?
Like, she didn't have to kill him.
Yeah, it's weird to me that this police lieutenant is, like, arbitrarily being like, we have to hide. You know, this is the greatest secret ever. It'll ruin society. And, like, there's no one else in her hierarchy that's kind of in on this or helping out or doing anything. Wallace knows about it, and I'm like, he must have, like, everyone in his pocket. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just bribe them. Like, my God. Don't kill them.
Yeah, we need this evidence for our research, you know?
like, here's $1 million straight to your bank account. You didn't see shit.
Isn't that how it happens? Yeah. Like, every other movie is like, oh, the bones disappeared. Weird, what happened? You know, like, they got someone somehow to get it for him. Like, we don't need this whole thing with her risking her, I guess, exposure, right? Because replicant killing someone's not a good idea.
Yeah, I guess they just don't, I don't know. I feel like she should have cared, but I guess they just don't care. They do what they want.
Right, yeah, like, they don't really have consequences.
She does have an interesting reaction to that scene of that woman being carved up, and that she sheds tears, and at first it's like, is she just... She is so high on Wallace's righteous vision. She's like, yes, I believe this. I'm moved. But I thought it was more like she is genuinely disturbed, and this is not something that she wants to see, is someone being killed, like, minutes after they're born.
Yeah.
Yeah, my interpretation of her character is someone who really, like, really kind of wants to break free of the control that Wallace has on her. And that's kind of where all that anger and violence comes from.
Did you feel that her motives and Wallace's motives were very different? Like, I felt like she was just, like, obeying and going along. Maybe she has to or whatever.
Right,
we see they can break out of that. But maybe she believes that, like, finding this baby and being able to produce is, like, a new thing for her species. Like, you know, apart from him just wanting to make it easier to manufacture replicants. Like, she thinks it's, you know, maybe similar to, like, the Resistance, kind of. But she doesn't agree with him.
She's also desperately seeking his approval, so that's part of it, too.
That scene is gorgeous, but it's probably the scene I hated the most in the movie, is where Jared Leto, like, carves up this lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, I don't know, anytime anything is like, we're going to take a naked woman and we're going to carve her up because she represents innocence or something like that, I'm like, okay, no. I didn't need this.
I mean, it was just a prop, and you're like, eh. Like, what was the purpose, really? Like, we already knew he was weird and crazy.
It was very over the top. I'm like, I understand that this is a powerful, unhinged man who is trying to get robots to fuck for cosmic galactic expansion.
That needs to be the question isn't can the robots fuck.
The robots must fuck.
Yeah, I didn't need, like, a camera to linger over this naked woman before she is brutally murdered. But yeah, I mean, it's a very gazy movie. Female nudity is very much par for the course in this film, but I enjoyed the rest of it enough that I was like, okay, whatever, I can ignore this enough to enjoy what's going on.
Yeah, there were no dudes, huh? Like, we didn't have any, like, male replicants just, like, hanging out there.
Yeah, it'd be nice for Ryan Gosling to... Did we see his chest? Take his shirt off. Take those replicant pants off.
He took his shirt off, right?
I think so. I think she takes his shirt off. And then we didn't have to endure a sex scene between, like, a weird, glitchy...
Right, don't they?
Max Headroom or something.
Yeah, they cut that scene off at the right point.
Yeah, we were just kind of, like, tantalized enough, I guess, to be like, ooh, that's, you know, that's interesting.
Right, well, I mean, it was the visuals that were the more important aspect.
Yeah.
I think I like Love, though, just for when she kicks Ryan Gosling's ass at the end and before he kills her, and she kisses him and then throws her fist in the air and says, I'm the best.
I'm the best.
Like, you do, honey. That's be
it's
great.
Like, what is going on?
Yeah. And that kiss thing seems like something that she's trying to, like, emulate, because Wallace does the same thing.
Yeah. It's like, I am going to establish my dominance over you, having just taken your life.
Yeah.
But then she drowns, I guess.
Yeah, that really was weird with how she dies by drowning.
The fact that he just held her under while Harrison Ford is over here about to die.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, why didn't he just, like, break her neck when he had her? It seemed weird to me.
The fact that they need oxygen. Again, like, if you want, like, super powerful robots, you should make them not need to have oxygen. They don't have blood.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like I said, it's all biological. Like, you see, like, they designed the eyeballs. It's all, like, organically grown. Like, they don't make them out of metal or anything. So you would think that the idea is that they're stronger and more durable for space, but, you know, for colonies and stuff. But, yeah, they should definitely be able to, you know, go out into space if they need to and breathe or, you know, not have to breathe, I guess. Maybe they have that already. Maybe they have, like, little, like, drones kind of that do that, and that's not what they're looking for. I don't know.
I just want to peruse their catalog and ask some questions.
How much does it cost?
Yeah, they do have... Well, she does have that discussion, love with the... there's a customer who is... I don't even remember. Like, she's there to buy replicants and...
It's a holographic phone call.
Is it... Like, there's a woman in the office and...
Yeah, she's a hologram.
Oh, I see. And so, love is like, we could throw in some pleasure models. So it seems like... I would assume that, like, a pleasure model has different schematics than a Ryan Gosling police model does. So you would assume they would be able to adjust them in some way.
Well, I think the anatomy is probably mm-hmm. all the same. It's just
it's the programming,
the memories, or whatever.
Sure, I guess that makes sense. Maybe.
She was saying, like, don't, like, since they're going to be mostly labor for that order, like, don't waste time on the complicated, like, emotional settings.
Yeah, these ones can be dumb.
That's definitely how it is in the first movie, is that you have Roy Batty, who is the more intelligent of the three of them, and then the others are kind of simple and we're not programmed for wide emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. You should watch the first one. It's really good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, as much as we love the first one, like, originally I saw the director's cut, right? Like, I don't know if I've ever seen more than, like, bits and pieces of the theatrical release. And then you had, like, the actual director's cut, the final cut. Like, but that was, like, maybe, 10 years ago that came out? It wasn't even that long ago.
There was a lot of studio meddling, and so the director's cut wasn't the actual director's cut. Ridley Scott actually had to come in and say, no, this is actually my final cut.
So the director's cut was kind of what he had originally intended to put in there. It didn't have, like, the voiceover with Harrison Ford. And there was a couple scenes that they cut out, like the unicorn and stuff that he had wanted. But someone else actually put that together. I think the editor put it together and put it out there. Because it had been released. I guess it had gotten shown in a couple of theaters because, like, they had gotten the raw cut. So, like, in the early 90s. So he worked with the studio and was like, well, why don't we, like, finish this and, like, you know, refine it. We can put it out for home video. And that's what they did. And then I was reading about this yesterday. I guess they actually started in 2000 on the final cut. And it, like, took him, like, 7 years, probably because he had other shit to do. And, like, it wasn't until 2007 that the final cut actually came out, which was, like, completely remastered and very similar to the director's cut, but with a couple small differences.
Final cut's really good.
Yeah, that's the one to watch, I think.
There is an actor, Edward James Olmos, shows up for like 5 seconds in 49, and he's the origami guy from the first movie, and he makes an origami figure for Ryan Gosling and puts it on the table. What is that supposed to be? Oh, a bull? Crap. It's like a...
I guess it almost looked like a rhino, but like, I don't know, but more like a bear.
Like a water buffalo.
Yeah. Like
it should have been a unicorn.
On, what was it? It should have been a unicorn, dang it. Which, who knows?
Maybe they thought that was a little too much of a nod.
It says it was a sheep. Someone says it was a sheep.
Interesting.
Oh, that would make sense.
Implying he's a sheep.
Well, like, no, in the book.
Or, well, and, like, kind of referencing the book as well, but in the original, the first one, he puts out several origami animals for Harrison Ford, I'm trying to remember. One of them was like a dude with an erection, I think, after he meets Rachel. And then like one of them, originally it was a chicken when he doesn't want to, like he's like, I don't want to do this, I'm retired. So he puts down a chicken, like, come on, man. You know, he's basically taunts him with these little origami figures.
Yeah, and the unicorn is meant to be, he knows that Deckard is, that his memories are implants and that he feels
the unicorn is weird.
Yeah, like the fact that, like, why would you have that as a memory? Like,
so either, because we know Deckard just randomly has this vision of a unicorn, which doesn't seem to come up, and then we get that unicorn origami at the end, which sort of seems to hint that, yeah, maybe, you know, just like he knows about all of Rachel's stories, you know, maybe this is how, you know, he knows about the unicorn memories that's, you know, implanted in Deckard for some reason. I mean, who's to say you couldn't implant memories in humans, whatever. But, I mean, it could just mean that, you know, maybe he knew that Rachel is the unicorn, and, you know, he's just not going to come after them because he was there.
Yeah, I assumed he felt on some level compassion for Deckard and his situation, and her shortened lifespan and potentially his shortened lifespan, and he was willing to let them go because of it. I listened to the commentary back, like, this was forever ago when we did the VOK on the first Blade Runner, and Ridley Scott has a fascination and fixation on unicorns, and they were in his movie Labyrinth, and he just really likes them, and so it didn't really have a deeper significance. He's just like, yeah, I like unicorns, so I wanted to have one in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, because he said in interviews that, like, yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of hints that maybe, you know, but it, you know, there's nothing definitive. He's never said anything definitive. This movie certainly didn't clear it up.
That was the right choice, though.
Yeah, I think it's better that way. I think it's definitely better with us not really having an answer. Let's see, what else is there to discuss?
Do y'all think Ryan Gosling is super dead at the end?
Yeah, I think it works. I think it works better as the story of him.
I think he's Schrodinger's K. I think we don't know.
It's very Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, it's fine to leave it that way. He, you know, it seems to me like he probably is about to die. But if they do a sequel, he probably didn't die.
Right. Yeah, that's just one of those things where I prefer it if you just, you know, leave it as dead. So.
Yeah, and then I guess, you know, we get the ending with Harrison Ford finally meeting his daughter for the first time, as we're led to believe. She doesn't seem to recognize him, but we don't really know.
I mean, why she wouldn't, though.
Yeah, well, we don't know how much she knows. We don't know if, like, the people in the underground, because they know about her, we've got her hidden. We don't know if they've clued her in, or... I mean, if she's completely oblivious, and the whole thing about the memories, so there were her memories from the orphanage, you know, and she was pretending to be a boy, so she had to have known about that whole switch there. She had to have some idea of what was going on, right?
Okay, yeah, that's my question. I did not follow the logic of there was a boy child and a girl child, and they had been both had. Like, they'd both been registered under the same birthday, but one of them was...
What it seems like they did is they took... There were a boy and a girl, and they took... It was her... The DNA profile. And they, like, made them both her DNA profile, which I guess I guess you have to have her DNA profile because it needs to be in the system, but then it doesn't make sense because of what they do. But, so they took her DNA profile, and... A race, like the boy had died, I'm assuming.
Or maybe he didn't even exist.
Or maybe he didn't exist, yeah. And so they basically said that, you know, oh, well, the girl died, and then this boy has left and was adopted or whatever, and she's the boy. And so to, you know, erase all trace of her so that if someone got that far, they're looking for a boy. But then the blackout happened, and they're like, well, shit, it'd be really hard for anyone to even get this far, but then they
didn't matter,
her. The replicants still knew where she was. They kept track of her.
Is her story then, does she know that she doesn't have a immunodeficiency? Because I assume that's not true. I feel like that is meant to keep her in one place. Like, yeah. She doesn't actually have a susceptibility to disease.
It keeps her in one place, and it keeps anyone from checking up on her, running tests, or doing anything. It keeps everyone away from her, I guess, until they need to. It could be that as a replicant child, maybe she does have problems, but I just assumed that was a cover.
That's going to be devastating for her. It's like, we kept you in this bubble for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
I could have been outside. Like, look, there are no trees outside. In here, you have trees.
So, yeah. This 40-foot room that you've probably paced a million times.
She lives in the holodeck. I mean, come on.
Yes. There are walls. It's a cage.
So.
Yeah.
I'd be infuriated.
But why does she use her own memories? So clearly her memories, or does she? Like, so if she didn't use them,
just infused,
she would have recognized them, right? So she would have said, why the hell do you have my memories? So I feel like she did use them. I don't know if it was specifically for Kay. Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. She's like, well, that's illegal.
She used them sporadically. Right, yeah. She just used them sporadically to help, I guess.
Do you think she just did it because she was kind of lazy? Or
no, I think it
just wanted to do it. Like, it didn't have anything to do with her being Deckard's child.
I think that's why she was considered the best memory maker, is because she found out that, like, infusing a couple real memories here just made for a better product.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems like she just never anticipated. Because if you're in her shoes and you have all these terrible memories, I guess your way of catharsis is to incorporate them into your art, and so she incorporates them into her memory making, and then she would never expect a replicant to show up and be like, hey, are these memories real, and then be confronted with, oh shit, like, this person or this thing has my memories. And she can't say it.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't understand why she doesn't say it. Like, the wording she uses is very careful, and she says somebody,
like, this happened to someone or something.
Maybe she's embarrassed.
Because she just went over the fact that, yeah, it's illegal to use her.
That's illegal, yeah.
And
oh, I see.
So this guy is coming with memories that are hers. And it's like, yeah, we're not supposed to use real memories. So the idea being that, like, if you use random memories from a real person, they might find out, or someone might go after that person's family. But, like, for her, if she was just using her own memories, she's stuck in this bubble. It's never going to come back. Like, no one knows that those memories are her. No one's going to be looking for anyone in those memories, like, especially if they're just childhood memories. Like, she doesn't know anyone outside the bubble, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. It would be very hard to watch Kay then have his existential tantrum while she's sitting on the truth, like, oh yeah, these are my memories, while he's throwing chairs and beating walls, well, like, no!
That's why it makes me wonder if, like, what she knows about her past or not. And if she does know, then I'm thinking that those memories were not something she gave just to Kay. Like, they randomly were given to a lot of different people.
Yeah, that was my interpretation and kind of how the rebellion started in the first place.
All have, like, these little memories that led them back to this truth. Because they mention, like, oh, he's seen the tree or something, right? And they know the date.
Interesting. Yeah, that they all have this... that would create problems, I guess, is that if you keep putting your memories into, especially if they're the same memories, into a bunch of different replicants, and that some of them start seeking out the truth of these memories, then you're eventually going to lead a bunch of people back to you because you were the common root of their existential crises.
But only one of them found the damn horse.
Yep.
Right.
I do object to one thing, like, the thesis for why she's so good at what she does. She's like, she's been in this bubble for years and years, so she's never been outside. She doesn't have any, like, personal, I guess, experience with the outside world, but somehow that makes her a better artist. I'm like, that doesn't pan out. Like, you
I spend
need
all my time watching movies and dreaming about outside, so I'm better at it.
I feel like that would make your work really brittle and artificial, but what do I
It would
know?
Make it, like, idealized, probably, and maybe that's what helps, is, you know, make it sharper, is that people want those, like, rosy, like, highly imagined memories. Maybe that helps. I don't know.
That would be a better thing for her to say, is, like, I've been in here since childhood, and so all of my dreams of the world are idealized, and that's what people want. They want the happy birthday party where all your friends showed up and clapped as you blew out the candles.
Yeah, and even if it's, like, a bad memory, like bullies and stuff, it's like there's like the heroic, you know, she hid her toy and didn't give up, and I don't know. We don't get numbers on how many replicants there are, or exactly what they do on Earth, or any of that sort of thing. So,
I really wonder if the fact that it's a horse, Deckard is the unicorn, right? He's special. He had a baby with a replicant. He got away. He's the special one. But Kay isn't special at all. He's a horse. He doesn't have a horn. He's not a unicorn.
Don't be like Kay. Be like Deckard. Oh man, that's terrible. All right. Well,
good movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Good movie. Good chat. You guys have any closing thoughts you'd like to share?
If it sounds like I'm kind of nitpicking and kicking this movie around, I am, because I did think a lot of stuff was dumb in it, but I also think it was probably the best movie I've seen in a long time. And, you know, the first one also had its problems. So I like being able to have a conversation about a movie that's a little jagged around the edges versus a movie that's, you know, just awes me with how great it is. So I appreciated this conversation. I had fun today.
Yeah, definitely.
It was the first movie in a while where I just felt like immersed, like within the world itself, through like the visuals and the score as well, which was just fantastic. And it was just a rare thing for me, and why I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, like I said, technically there's hardly anything to complain about in this movie. It was just so. Cinematography, the score, I can't even think of any of the like visual effects that weren't that great. Maybe the part where, you know, you have like CG Rachel when she comes out was like, there was a little bit there where it didn't, you know, it kind of looked a little too digital, but the lighting was dark enough, I think, that compensated for that. It looked really nice.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining me. Hopefully we'll have more of these kind of little movie reviews coming out as the blockbusters hit. I'm sure we'll have Star Wars and various other things. Is there anything, you guys have any other podcasts coming up? Anything going on?
Someday the Witcher podcast will come out.
Oh, wow.
Well, when it comes out, I'll probably finally play that game.
Witcher 3 is pretty amazing.
Yeah, the third one's real good.
I have it, but I just, it's unopened, you know?
Yeah. It's also about 100 hours, so.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a long game.
I've got a lot to get through on the way there. So, all right. Well, as usual, we got the reread coming up. You can find us on the WordPress, vokpodcast.com, Twitter and Facebook and all the usual things. So find us there. Find us on the Podcast Advice and Fire forums if you want to come chat. All right. Take care.
First thing, Kay's jacket.
Yeah, the most important thing.
it seems like a prime talking point. So, let's see. It's gone.
Thirsty.
Hold on, that's the shadow baby. He needs a drink.
Wait, no.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Cool.
By the way, it's Denis Villeneuve.
That's the director.
The director's name is Denis Villeneuve. I'm just saying some people might get angry at that.
Well, then I will have to go and edit that and fix it. And it'll sound really awkward, but...
I didn't know that it wasn't Ridley Scott who directed this until the credits came up.
Yeah, same here. Denis Villeneuve. Whatever. I just read it how I saw it. poor Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. I felt bad for him. I felt bad for the actor because I'm like, man, is Harrison Ford tired of coming back for all these roles that he played how many ever many years ago.
This is his penance for all those years of like stop asking about Star Wars and Indiana Jones. I do serious work like The Fugitive and it's like, dude, just enjoy the fact that people like your work and some people in fandom like your work. And now he's like, I guess I'm back. I fucking hate it. Whatever, kill me, please.
I like curmudgeonly Harrison Ford in that. he just looks at us as a job. He's like, stop making a fucking big deal about it.
What do you want my autograph? What the hell do you want my autograph for? I want your autograph. Yeah. What do you do? he seems like one of those guys that's been just kind of unhappy with fame a lot, but yeah, like is happy with everything that it's afforded him. Like he's been able to live for the most part the lifestyle he likes, but I don't know why he's looped back around to all of these franchises or things that kind of started his career that people wanted and mostly successful. I mean, other than that last Indiana Jones movie, we're not going to speak of that.
Yeah, he likes Indiana. I think that was the one that he really was excited.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah, I think he owns part of that property though, and so he has a personal investment in.
You know, that does sound familiar because he was big enough at the time to be like, "Hey, I want to cut of the back end."
Right. DJ that. Yeah.
Spielberg and Lucas were involved and all that.
I've never seen Crystal Skull.
Yeah, it was not great. They're doing another one though. Hopefully, maybe he can redeem it. But in the Crystal Skull, spoilers for the first 5 minutes of Crystal Skull. But there is a scene where he's at like one of those like nuclear testing sites where they have a fake town that's going to get blown up, and he hides in a fridge.
The refrigerator.
He gets blown like a mile away, and like opens the door of the refrigerator like, oh, okay, and like walks away, and that was basically that set the whole tone for the movie.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah.
So. There's a really good action chase sequence in it though that I really enjoyed with the cars in the jungle. But other than that, it's a pretty bad movie.
Well, there are some good. I mean, there's some good in that movie. There's definitely some watchable parts of it, but overall, it was very very disappointing.
I think it's because he came to acting late in his life compared to most people, and so.
Well, he was like a handyman or something, right?
He was a carpenter until he was like 30-something.
Oh, wow.
He's very salt of the earth, kind of like, whatever, right, just do the fucking work.
He seems like probably if you get him outside of Hollywood and you're just like you're having some beers and chilling, he seems like he's probably a cool guy to hang out with. He just doesn't like the cameras and doesn't like, I mean, I get it. It's fine.
Versus Ryan Gosling, who's been groomed since he was a musketeer. Like he has never known.
Know what to do when the cameras went away.
Yeah, he probably
then
has never
he would emote.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
He's the saddest puppiest face I've ever seen on an actor.
And all of the "Hey Girl" memes. Why am I sad? Because you're not here with me, girl.
Cheerios, Ryan Gosling.
Oh man. He even has just an adorable name, Gosling. Okay.
Yeah, he's just
sure.
Go see Drive. Drive is a good movie.
Yeah, right. Drive is great.
Yeah. What a fantastic movie.
Another great jacket. I forgot he has that scorpion jacket.
That's all you need is that jacket for a Halloween costume, really. Like you don't need to do much. Jacket and jeans, maybe some boots, but
I honestly think after that movie came out, I might have looked around online to see if I could find a jacket
Have it. You can have it.
Scorpion jacket.
And I love how in the movie there's no explanation for it.
No,
this crazy scorpion jacket. Awesome. That works. That's also makes you really easy to identify as a criminal. But cool.
Yeah. Well, you get that character has mythologized himself kind of secretly. Like he takes a certain pride in being the folklore figure that he is, the driver. Silent and intimidating, so of course he would have his own designer jacket that everyone recognizes.
But I don't keep it at my home because then the police could find it if I'm ever investigated. So all right, that's good after show stuff. You guys want to give it a proper send off?
See ya.